I'm David Schreiner-Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. And as expertise-based business owners, we just never seem to have enough time. So knowing how to fix these problems is really important. Would you like to learn how you can generate more leads without struggling to deliver your services to the clients you already have? What if you were taught how to step out of your comfort zone to leverage tools like podcasts, social media, and video in order to constantly bring in leads, sales, and keep your pipeline full? And what if you knew how to hire the right talent that would help you scale your business and create greater value without being so hands-on? You can join our free Smashing the Plateau community, where listeners and guests of Smashing the Plateau connect, collaborate, and learn how to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life. To join, you would go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Lisa Earle McLeod. Lisa is the thought leader who introduced Selling with Noble Purpose into business. She's an author, business consultant, and keynote speaker. Her clients include Google, Roche, and Dave & Buster's. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Lisa, what is noble purpose? How would you describe it?
Well, it might be easier to start with two things that it's not. Most people think that the purpose of a business is to make money. But what my research and some others have found is that organizations and individuals who have a noble purpose bigger than money actually wind up making more money. And so that leads me to the second thing it's not. A noble purpose is not about pure philanthropy. What a noble purpose is about absolutely understanding the impact that you have on your customers and making that the North Star of your business.
So don't focus on the money first.
Don't focus on the money first, and don't focus on philanthropy first, because what happens is we all see organizations that are mercenaries when it comes to money, and they can make money, but usually what winds up happening is they become very transactional businesses. Their employees treat the organization like a transaction, which goes over to the customers. And so they wind up with very little competitive differentiation, because money is an internal metric. And, you know, you talk about smashing the plateau. One of the things that causes people to plateau is because they're so focused on revenue, they're not focused on customer impact. On the flip side, we see all kinds of philanthropic organizations and charities that are so focused on giving away everything that they can't stay solvent. It's like a depressed atmosphere. And so what my research has found is if you have that laser-like focus on how are you improving the customer's condition, and that's the measuring stick you use for your business, you will make more money and you will have the ability to be a better corporate citizen.
You know, it's interesting. I'm thinking as you're describing noble purpose, I'm thinking about the vast majority of people I serve in my business, and they tend not to be people just starting out in the business world. Mm-hmm. They're usually people that are sort of mid-career or older. And one of the first questions I'll ask a prospect or a new client is, well, what does success mean to you? And the answer is, it never starts out with money.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, if you look at Maslow's hierarchy, money is important. Having said that, it doesn't create emotional engagement and it doesn't enable you to create competitive differentiation. So when I work with clients on a noble purpose, it's not just make the client's life better. It needs to have real specificity around that. So for example, one of our clients is in the travel business, and their noble purpose is we care about delivering amazing travel experiences. And that's not just some marketing tagline. They actually have put some metrics to what caring looks like. They put some metrics to how the client looks at amazing, and they put some metrics to how they deliver. So it's not just some, woohoo, we're making the world a better place here. It sits a little bit below that in terms of there needs to be some specificity of exactly how you, your team, your company, your products are improving the client's condition.
It also strikes me as I'm listening to you with these descriptions that the companies that are focused primarily on financial metrics are probably not really not all that interesting places to work. And the ones that focus on real specific impact, like you're describing, probably do a lot better job of engaging their employees.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the data is there. So one thing, I work with a lot of large sales organizations. So imagine the difference between your manager saying to you, if I was your sales coach, saying, David, I want you to go in and I want you to close this thing. I want you to close it big. I want you to close it hard. How big are you going to close it? Huge. You know, when's the revenue going to hit? How much money are we going to make? If I coached you in that way, how is any of that in any way, shape, or form interesting to our customers? It's not. But what we teach people to do is to ask better questions of their team, which causes them to ask better questions of the customer. So I would say, David, how are you going to improve this customer's condition? What does it look like? What does it feel like when you're done? How is the customer going to be better as a result of doing business with you? And when you can describe that, you become more emotionally engaged, and then you have a more emotionally engaging story to tell your customer. And then, oh, by the way, your win rate goes up and your deal size goes up.
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder if you could walk us through a typical story that you encounter in these kinds of situations with the organizations that you serve.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example, and they're pretty public about it. Dave and Buster's is a client of mine, and they're awesome. And they have a group of people that go out and call on companies. Because what you might not know is, if you've been to Dave and Buster's with your family, Dave and Buster's rents out their space for a lot of meetings, and they host it's a great venue for meetings. So they have to go out and call on the meeting planner, the executive who's planning the meeting, and they have to compete with the Ritz and the Marriott. And so when I worked with Dave and Buster's, we had to answer three questions. And I call them the three discovery questions we do with every client. How do you make a difference? How do you do it differently than your competition? And on your best day, what do you love about your job? So I worked with the senior team, and what we realized was that Dave and Buster's champions laugh out loud fun. So that their noble purpose is, we champion laugh out loud fun. So then we organized a whole sales approach around that, to when their people are going out and calling on these customers, instead of asking them the usual, how many people do you have? When's your meeting going to be? They were able to say, what role does fun play in your meetings? How important is it for people to have fun? When was the last time people laughed out loud? What's the value to helping people do that? And they increase their win rate, and they increase their deal size because they start having a different customer conversation.
And does it work the same way when you're talking about working internally with employees?
Absolutely. Wouldn't you want to be on the team who champions laugh out loud fun?
I would be.
Who doesn't want to be part of that? And, you know, I've also done work in the pharmaceutical industry where they are changing patients' lives.
What's a good story from the pharmaceutical industry?
So that's actually how I discovered the concept of noble purpose. And I was out with one particular representative, and I was doing some research for a pharma company to identify what differentiated their top performers. And as part of the research, I had a conversation with one of their salespeople, and she talked to me about one particular patient. They sold an arthritis drug, and she talked to me about the improvement that they had made in the life of this grandmother. And she said, I think about her every single day. that's my purpose. And as it turned out, this is several years ago, this was some of the initial research I did for the book, the salespeople in pharma that had this noble purpose of patients were actually the top performing salespeople.
Lisa, what are some of the fears that either salespeople or other employees need to overcome when they're first introduced to the idea of noble purpose?
Well, the first fear is the CFO sitting there going, but we have to make the number, but we have to make the number. And one of the things that you have to understand about this is driving revenue and noble purpose are linked. And I'll go back to the pharmaceutical example. If you get your entire team rallied around the idea that you have a life-changing or even life-saving drug for patients, they will blast through the quota because they know that what they're doing makes a difference. And so one of the things that people have to get, one of the fears is, gosh, if I don't focus on my number, I won't hit my number. No, the exact opposite happens. When you focus on improving the customer's condition and doing it as big and boldly as you can and as often as you can, and you're as assertive as you can be about that, you actually outperform your competition. The data tells us that companies with a noble purpose beat their competitors by over 350%. Because who would you want to do business with? Someone whose purpose is to improve their ROI or someone whose purpose is to improve your ROI?
How long does this shift typically take for salespeople or employees to make in the way they behave when they start focusing on using the principles of noble purpose as opposed to doing business the way they had done in the past?
Well, there's two answers to that. The short answer is behavior can change overnight. The longer answer is internal company systems take a lot longer. And so typically we've seen with our clients double-digit revenue increases, but it generally takes a year. And I want to be really clear on this. It's almost like if you've ever watched one of those dating advice shows where the guy gets advice. So if I say this and I say this, you know, will she do what I want? And customers can tell your intent. And so if you say, okay, I'm going to go in and ask these questions about how I can improve the customer's condition, am I going to see a double-digit revenue increase overnight? Well, customers are reading you all the time, and employees are reading the leader all the time. So we've had companies get very dramatic revenue increases, but it has to come from a place of authenticity. One of our clients is a company called Blackbaud, and they are a publicly traded company. And we saw over the course of the year, they implemented noble purpose, the CEO embraced it. We saw a 50% increase in the stock price over the course of the year. Now they coupled it with a whole host of other things. But that CEO was so genuine about the difference that their software was making to all of these companies that they helped fundraise and other things. I mean, you can look it up. It's a pretty public story. I wrote about it for Forbes. But, you know, people, when you think about this idea of smashing the plateau, it starts with what's in your head. And then it goes to your behavior. And then you get the response from customers. So it has to start with what changing the story in your head.
So with that in mind, and the fact that it can take 12 months or more to achieve the kind of financial results that people might hope for, what happens when the CFO is looking for dramatic changes within a quarter as opposed to within a year?
Well, it's a good point that you bring up. So I do want to make the point on this. A lot of it depends on the length of your sales cycle. So for example, I've worked with consultants that have a pretty short sales cycle. And when they start changing their behavior, they will see a change in results within 30 days. If you're talking a larger company that has a 6-month sales cycle, you know, revenue is always a lagging indicator. Revenue is the result of the behaviors that we're exhibiting 6 months ago. So today's revenue is based on what you did 6 months ago. So to answer your question, what do you say when a CFO wants to see a result in 2 quarters? If you want to see a great financial result in 2 quarters, you're probably better off cutting expenses or firing a bunch of people, to be quite candid with you. If you want to create competitive differentiation over the long haul and see a better result 3-4 quarters and every subsequent quarter, this will work. And I think one of the challenges that we face now is we're in this quarterly capitalism, where there's so much push for every initiative to just pay off within 90 days that it puts a lot of pressure on CEOs. You know, most of our clients that are fairly large companies have seen revenue increases within 6 months. But if you're looking to get one within 60 days and you have a 6-month sales cycle, it's quite candidly, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to realize that what we're talking about is some kind of enduring impact based on a shift in culture.
And that's what can change quickly, though, is a shift in culture. And, you know, we have this idea that we say as human beings, which is people don't like change. But I actually don't think that's true. If people didn't like change, no one would ever get married or have a baby. And people do that every single day. So what we've seen with the clients we work with is people are yearning to be part of something bigger than themselves. They're desperate for it, to be quite candid. And when a leader goes out and says, like one of our clients did, and they're in the foundation business, I mean, home foundations, concrete, not the most exciting business in the world.
Literal foundations.
Yeah, literal. Yeah, not like women's foundations, not like, you know, banks. No, they are called Foundation Support Works, and they will, if your home is crumbling on the foundation and it's leaking, they will fix it. So it is tough, blue-collar work. And when their senior leadership team, which is two brothers, and their parents were the founders of the company, when they go forth and they say, you know what, we do more than just shore up people's basements. We are here to redefine the contracting industry, because most people that deal with a contractor, you know, maybe they come, maybe they don't come, maybe their work's good, maybe it's not. They said, that's not good enough for us. We're going to redefine this industry. And you can literally watch their team. They have hundreds of people. You can watch them stand a little taller and say, hell yeah, I want to be part of that. I want to be part of something that makes a difference, something special. And so, you know, this company is called Foundation Support Works. They've been voted a top workplace in Omaha, blue collar company. They've been voted a top workplace for millennials. And they have a rough, tough job. But they've also decided that their work is going to mean something, and their employee engagement scores are through the roof.
Listeners, I hope you're paying attention to this, because Lisa is describing something that's really critical to the success of any business. And in particular, if you are trying to deal with generating more leads and trying to scale your business, understanding how noble purpose can impact your own results, this is really a great episode. And furthermore, we're going to be going into depth on these and other issues inside our Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where you can interact with guests and other listeners of the podcast. And you can join at smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. Lisa, I wondered if we could talk a little bit about, as you discovered that noble purpose was so important, what were some of the plateaus that you hit in your own business?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. So I did this study with a pharma company where we discovered that purpose was the driving force in top performing sales reps. And you know, you don't want to be the cobbler's kids out there with no shoes. And so at the time, our business was fairly small. I had written a couple books. They had just sort of done okay. And so I really had to get clear with myself about why I'm here. And what noble purpose does when you have clarity of noble purpose, it answers the why and the what question together, because it gives you that reason to believe, and there's also some specificity to it. And so for me, what I realized that I am truly skilled at is helping leaders make money and make a difference, and combining those two things at the same time. And so our company, our purpose is we help leaders drive revenue and do work that makes them proud. And so I really had to get grounded myself and think about how am I going to help people do both of these things at the same time? And how much money can I help people make? And how can I combine that with being proud of what they do? Because for me, I had to get clear on my own money story. And I've done that. And I used to have a kind of ambiguous relationship with money. And I've come to realize that when you don't make good money, when your company isn't a profitable company, you can't make good decisions. You make short-term decisions. You aren't thinking clearly. And so I had to get really clear that helping people make more money in honest ways was a noble endeavor, and that I could combine that with helping them do something that makes a difference. And so I've mentioned a couple of companies here. You know, when we help the concrete company help their people take pride in differentiating themselves in a blue-collar business, all boats rise, because their company makes more money, they're good people, their people make more money, they employ more people. When we help Dave and Buster's champion the cause of laugh out loud fun, well, guess what? All of a sudden, those meetings are not quite so boring. And so for me, I had to learn for myself how to combine that money story and that meaning story so that I could do it with our clients.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful, because you're totally right. We can't help our clients smash the plateau unless we can smash it ourselves.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, when I was listening to your intro, I think the other thing is, you know, when you talk about smashing the plateau and having these breakthrough results, I can tell you beyond, you know, any modesty, we have done that in our business. I mean, we have helped companies have breakthrough results. Ourselves, our business has grown, my platform's grown, I've done other books. And at the same time, when you were talking about smashing the plateau, I thought, oh, I haven't done this at all on my health. Oh, geez. And so I was like, I'm still drinking too much wine on airplanes and not exercising enough. And what it, because I think I have a mental block that you can be really healthy when you travel. And so the reason I bring up that juxtaposition, I think for everyone's listening, is draw strength from the places where you're already doing it, because you probably are. And it's a matter of transferring that same discipline over to the areas where maybe you're not.
Right. And I think another lesson is we can't accomplish brilliant success in every single area simultaneously. If we're starting from a place where we have multiple plateaus, it's a lot easier to smash them one at a time than to try to smash all of them simultaneously.
Yeah, than to do a whole life overhaul. There's been a lot of research on this, actually. And, you know, self-discipline is a muscle that some people are born with more than others, but it's also a muscle you can train. But having said that, if you are exhibiting extreme self-discipline in certain areas of your life, like your mindset, if you used to be the kind that went in and said, oh my God, I just want to close this deal, and now you're having to reframe yourself and say, okay, how can I improve this customer's condition? What's the most creative way that I could help them? And that's a mental discipline for you. Chances are, at the end of the day, you're going to want to come home and watch Netflix and not think, because you've been so disciplined all day long. So I think focusing on one area. And for people who want to break through in a new level of business, I would suggest thinking very deeply about those three questions. How do I make a difference? How do I do it differently than my competition? And on my best day, what do I love about my job? Because the story that you create from that, that's your source of competitive differentiation.
Brilliant. And Lisa, this is actually a great way to make a segue into the bonus question about what you've done in your business and what are the top actionable steps that you have achieved, or top actionable steps that you've used to achieve the kind of dramatic results that you've just described. And I'm going to ask you to hold your answer because we're going to post your answer inside our Facebook group, but to think about that. And while you're thinking about it, let's turn and talk about somebody else. Whom do you know who has done a really remarkable job of smashing the plateau?
So I know a lot of people, some of whom are guests you have on the show. I know you had Seth Kahan on this show, and he's a dear friend of mine. And boy, he has had some breakthrough results. But
that's for sure. And he described them actually in great detail on the show, which was terrific.
So listen to that show.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
Do you know, I will tell you one person who I admire greatly, who is now my business partner, and that's my daughter. And before everybody groans and goes, oh God, mother describing her daughter. One of the things that has impressed me the most with her that she has done, I am a raging extrovert. And she is not. She is an introvert and she's a thinker and she's more quiet. And one of the things that has impressed me, a plateau that she smashed, she was not afraid of public speaking, but she just didn't get a lot of energy from it. But one of the things that I saw her do was she's gotten really, really good at it. And she runs seminars now without me, and she's great at it. And one of the things that she did in order to do that was she honored her introverted self. And so the day before she does one, she's not on the phone. She's not talking to me, other clients. She goes internal and gives herself some space to have that quiet time. And the reason I'm so impressed with it is that I think a lot of us don't think about what is it going to take for me to be successful in this scenario that's maybe a day from now or a week from now. We think in the moment, okay, what do I need to do? But to really think, if a week from now I'm going to be on a plane and I'm going to be out with this client doing, you know, 3 days of stuff, how can I set myself up for success? Because I think that's why a lot of people don't break through those plateaus. It's because they're so busy trying to run every little thing that they don't set themselves up for success in the critical moments that would actually propel them.
That is a great example. So thank you for talking about your daughter. What can we look forward to in the near future from you? What's coming up?
So I wrote Selling with Noble Purpose 5 years ago, and the book did really well. And so what's coming up for me, and I'm saying this aloud just to create accountability for myself, is I'm going to do the next version of that. That was a really helpful book to jumpstart a new sales conversation. Since I've done that, people have been asking me to do something even more specific around different types of industries. How do you use this in healthcare? How do you use it in financial services? How do you use it in tech? And so I'm going to pick a couple of industries and do like a cool little book around B2B sales where each chapter is for a different industry. I think that's my next thing.
Oh, what a great idea. I can't wait to see it.
Thanks.
Well, Lisa, this has been a really great discussion, and I'm so grateful that you've taken time to come on Smashing the Plateau today. My guest today has been Lisa Earle-McLeod, who introduced the concept of selling with noble purpose in business. Thank you again, Lisa, for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. Again, to get Lisa's answer to my bonus question, join our free Smashing the Plateau community on Facebook, where all the practical tips our guests share on the show will be there waiting for you to sift through and implement in your own business. Go to smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook to join now. That's smashingtheplateau.com/Facebook. We want you to smash the plateau in business, work, and in life.